This is CliffCentral.com.
What time does this thing start, Eric?
Just now, man.
Where is Eric? You on?
He's on a cruise.
Oh, yes, there he is. That's fine. You sound good.
I know, I sound amazing.
Welcome to the Just Now Comedy Podcast, Friday the 9th of November. Yeah. Guest today, who's our guest?
It is I.
That's cool. What number are you?
I am...
Yeah, we don't
well, I'm hearing one. Myself in my head, so...
That's fine, yeah. Eric's on a boat.
Is he on a boat?
So you actually said, I'm on a boat.
Who's he with? What? He's on MSC, family. Obviously.
It must be... It's not with Carvin.
Or is it his family?
Yeah.
He went to the guest.
Oh.
Amazing.
So he's going to sit there the whole time going, listen, I'm going to be
five. How do you know that?
Because I follow him on Instagram.
They're friends, bro.
Oh, so it's Insta-stalker.
It's just got weird now.
Insta-stalker.
Well, look, it used to be Stalkbook, and then that one fell out of favor. Now it's Insta-stalker.
Yeah. Do you think he's gone with his family?
No, he 100% has gone with his family.
So it's not one of those...
Because
it's not
his
like,
brother looks exactly like him. Exactly like him.
So maybe he just took his brother.
That may be a good thing.
So it's not one of those rock the boat
tools. So is this one of those things where if Eric's ever at a gig and he's like dying on his ass, can we say that maybe it was his brother doing
he
the
He does
gig?
Do that.
I see.
It's his... Fallback.
That was my brother.
Yes, he's on some big ass boat with his family.
Okay, so he's not doing comedy on the boat. Because I know Carvin Gold's. Carvin's on.
I think.
Yeah, actually, no. He's on. He's on the not symphony. He's on Classico or something.
Yeah, because also I saw the no when's the O-Ship one. I think it's in Poor Pops.
O-Ship's cool because it is a party thing.
Yeah,
it's comedy.
A party show.
Those difficult ones are when it's the normal cruise.
Yeah,
and you're the comedian.
I did that.
Did you do
March.
That?
I did that gig in March. You
see,
remember?
So you have the crowd is just weird.
Oh, no, dude, this was a ship going from Australia to London and came past this. It was British and Australian expats. Well, Australians and British expats, average age between 70 and 80.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah.
That's my crowd.
What I loved is that the Ukrainian crew loved me and the other show performers loved me and the 60 South Africans on the ship loved me. Apparently, the one critique I kept getting was, got a very strong accent. I was like, no, madam.
That's how
you
speak.
You have not heard a strong accent. Watch District 9 and you will hear a strong accent.
But yeah, but it's also, accents are also like it's a thing because wherever you go, like, I obviously know I have an accent,
yes.
But like, you can hear me because you
yes, we're
to
familiar
it.
With
but
we're
the moment you
with
move
it.
Out, like if I go to PE,
do you know you don't get understood properly. Your words will not be understood if you go overseas. You'll start speaking, and if they skip one word, the whole sentence doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Then you lose them.
And you have to start your pace.
But on the cruise, it's hectic because those people they're over. They're over a certain age,
and they like certain things.
And like certain
things. It was weird. It was the first time I'd ever done. I ended up doing like.
Who else was on with you?
No, it was just me. I did 3 hours over 2 nights.
And they've got like this weird room where now we're going to go see comedy.
It was very, very nice. It was like a performance room, a show bar. But the thing is, I'm on a ship and I've only had 16 hours to adjust. So it was the only time I'd ever done sit-down comedy. I sat down on a bar stool the whole time because I was tired of falling all over the stage. And it was weird just sitting
there. Wobbly.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's and you feel like a doer's because it's like being the only drunk person at the party.
That was me on the MSC because I get travel, but I don't. Yeah. I act like it doesn't happen. Right? Like even in cars, I start feeling nauseous after a while, whatever. But when I was performing, so I was hosting the comedy.
Did you drive with us to Clarence?
Yeah. Mm. I was not in the back.
Really?
But you got to keep that gangster rep.
Yeah.
You should have swapped with Martin.
I always drink a liter cranberry juice. just try to hold myself
that
together.
Work?
No, just trying to keep myself occupied.
Cool.
But anyway, so on the MSC, I was hosting the show, but we hit like heavy, heavy, rough waters. Like, they closed the decks and the water was literally flying onto the deck.
Holy crap.
Day after tomorrow.
It's high for
us. Is that O-Ship or what is that?
It's O-Ship.
Is it?
So we cancelled the show in the afternoon, the matinee show, because everyone goes to the island and then they have to come back, get off the boats, shower, I guess, and then come down to the theater. So we said, let's not do the day. Let's stall and do it later. To the evening, and then the roughness came, and then I was throwing up. So I was going on stage, introducing the ex, and as soon as I'm like very calm, and my face looks normal, everything's great, like a normal show. As soon as I get behind that curtain, I grab the bucket, I throw up, and I just sit there looking in the bucket for like 20 minutes, and then as soon as like Deep Fried Man's finished, I'm drinking water and I come walking out. Yeah, that's Deep Fried Man, everybody. And do some
microphone,
more. Puts.
Microphone smell blacker,
that,
hey?
And that right there is how you comed. That is what
they call
it means
to
be a comic.
They call it Dr. Showbiz or something like
that. Yeah, the stage doctor.
When the lights go on, you'll come out there. Hey, good evening, welcome, welcome, welcome. And then you go back.
Diarrhea is gone. AIDS gone.
No, that's the thing, AIDS. Adrenaline.
I should also put like that. Like, we can cure all the world's diseases by
you
having
just
a
mattress. 5 minutes. But that's the thing, though. It's, there's people who enjoy it.
You go to
the
doctor, they'll say, I'm in theatre from 5 to
7. Yeah, oh, is that what they're doing?
That's what they're doing.
Is that why I always feel like crap afterwards?
They're How often do you go to hospital? Material.
I think I've been there 4 times in my life.
They had me in stitches, the one doctor. Eh?
gosh.
Roll on the drums, crash on the high hat.
Never let Alfred hear that shit, bro.
Or Movada.
What am I missing?
My friend sent me a video. He goes, these guys are so funny. It's Movada and Jim Atkins doing an interview with the SARS ladies. So
they've
taken their her words and then they've added their words. So I said to him, don't ever send me that again, please.
Yeah.
It's official.
No, I get that a lot, though. I mean, I run that. There's a group on Facebook, the South African stand-up comedy group.
Oh, yeah. I left that shit like in 82.
Okay. Odd, considering Facebook didn't exist yet.
I left it in 1951.
What exactly? So, are you 28. Sure this was not Facebook yet in 82. That was just the library, maybe.
A bunch of people standing around.
It was just book.
So what is the group?
No, it's South African stand-up comedy. And the whole premise of it is, if you've got a gig to punt, if you've got anything stand-up comedy related, put it up and we'll punt it.
Don't rant.
And there's this one dude. He's just this random dude. I don't know where he's from, but he keeps posting this thing to the group where he does 15 minutes of stand-up. But he's standing in a studio. It's just him, and he's dubbed in canned laughter.
It's Mum Z.
No. He's some colored brother.
But
I keep forgetting his
name.
I managed to sit through maybe 45 seconds. When I started hearing the canned laughter, I was like, no, delete.
But it is weird because he's very determined. I've never done that.
Oh, clearly.
Mumsy does a thing like that for his. So he does a tour. It's actually a dope tour that he does.
Mm-hmm. Mumsy.
Yeah, he does like a single. He does like. I think he's got like Hennessy or something. So he does like with Joburg, Pretoria, one night, one room type of thing. And it's dope. People pay like 500 rand a ticket.
Good lord.
And you get like a meal, a drink, whatever. Okay. It's a nice thing. But his marketing is exactly that. He's standing in obviously a green screen vibe, so it looks like a stage, and he's like doing a gag, but he doesn't do the punchline. Then he's like, to the other end of that joke.
That's nice.
So hang on. So you've done the boat. You've done a ship. Else was on? You've done it under
myself, Deep Fried Man, and Mojek Lekoko, and also Lethley was with us.
Okay,
yeah, excellent. Yeah, it was amazing.
Who books that? Is it still?
Well, it was Comedy Central because I went directly after the Rose Battle, so I guess it was kind of.
And so, how many used to be, what's his name?
Fresh was there because Fresh was also
was
Fresh
judge. Fresh and Euphonic.
Yeah, because Fresh was a judge at the Rose Battle as well.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
It just so happened that we became friends and then we saw each other on the ship. I call him Tato now.
That is his real name.
Yeah.
Rich, okay, for those of you who never knew what DJ Rich's real name was,
that's new information to me.
Because here's what you were saying now. There's a thing called a box office recording that they've done, which is White Christmas, which is Mojack, Glenn Biederman, Pam,
Robbie,
and someone else.
Skulk.
So they've done the thing, but it's quite interesting how the company that's doing it has asked for the material from the comedian. So they phoned myself, they phoned Nina, they phoned.
Really? Are you also on White Christmas?
And Laz. No, it's the next one. It's Valentine's Day. And their phone is saying, can
I
have
saw
your
that,
material?
Yeah.
So I'm like, what do you mean, can you have my material?
They
like,
want to review it.
Review it. So how? In what format? Must I record it? Do the whole show somewhere at Kitchener's or something? Must I send it to you in writing form?
Yeah.
It's not going to be that funny.
Have you ever seen my? Have you ever seen me before? Yeah. That should be in there.
Yeah, so why am I being invited to this?
That happened to him. It happened to Lewis Black when he was asked to do the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And his first words were, have all the other comedians died?
Yeah, why am I
doing
this?
Have you seen my act? What are you thinking? The guy said, I'm sure it'll be fine. So he had to do his material over the phone to this guy. And the only word that they had an issue with was nipple. Okay. And he says, does the president not have
nipples?
Does Mrs. Bush not? Is there something?
She definitely got nipples.
Yeah. I saw an interview with Obama where he said something about... that was just obviously from hanging around, you know, myself and Trump hanging around in Kenya as young boys.
Sitting,
you know, me and Trump when we were in Kenya.
Did you guys see that video this week of Trump abusing all the reporters.
I saw that. Oh, yeah. Specifically, God, they actually banned that guy now.
Yeah, that CNN guy.
Yeah, it's.
But they hit him with a backward one because they said he assaulted the lady. Did you see the video?
No, I didn't see the thing of that. I saw Trump interacting with people, but I didn't see any.
Oh, they said to him, the reason why you banned it is because
because of the lady that came to take the mic out of his hand. Did you see it?
So this is hardly assault.
So the lady came over because she's like, no, and then the guy's like, and Trump was saying to him, you fucking idiot, whatever. And he's like, no, but I just want to ask one. And then the lady came over, and he said, sorry, ma'am, and he... jerked the mic away before she could take it.
Yeah, and she just sat down.
She kind of crouched in front of him.
It's a bit rich from Trump talking about assaulting women. Yeah. Last time I checked, you know, that reporter didn't pay to bang a porn star.
I think that was the only way to kind of get rid of him, you know what I mean? Because he's in your face.
I mean, this jackass has just fired Jeff Sessions.
Answering questions.
Yeah, it's answering the question. That'll be...
I love it.
So I don't know how to give them my material.
It's either just write it out in full.
But I also know for a fact when I'm on stage and I look in their eyes and this material is not working, I'll adapt to whatever the hell will.
You change the material whether it's working or not.
I change my material on stage.
But they probably just want to see what you're talking about, not like rape or...
There's a 100% chance I'm not going to talk about rape.
Well,
there's also a 100% chance that I'm going to change my material as soon as I walk on stage. If I walk on with my right foot... That's the material you're getting.
If
I walk on and I see a light, a moth,
a pogo stick.
I'm ADD. I can't send them the material. If I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Dude, it's literally, it's them trying to cover their ass and it's...
But I've never, you know what, I've never ever had to do that.
Send them the script for like a movie like Ghost or something, like the whole script.
And then Swayze.
including the soundtrack. This is what I'm going to do. Be red that over
that
this.
That's your technical writer. I need a jib.
That's dope.
Go
full, bro.
Whoopi Goldberg costume.
You need to play Thunderstruck from 2 minutes and 22 seconds in.
Yeah.
And then you need an Iron Man suit.
You need a blue light. Yeah. You need an Iron Man suit.
That's
you need a midget on a chair.
Excellent.
Midget on a chair.
And I need Vittorio sitting next to the midget to give it perspective.
And Eric's head through a hole in the wall.
One of you sitting really far away, one sitting close.
And it's Father Ted joke. It's like,
what about Eric's head through the hole in the wall?
No, in the curtain to say, that's funny.
That's right.
There's a lot of
cool. Done. Why don't they just listen to the podcast? I'm in.
There we go.
Cool. The whole main idea of this. Have you got comedy news? Ryan Holiday.
No, I got no comedy.
I find it strange that Eric doesn't have comedy news, and yet his Instagram is living he's living his best comedy life.
Yeah.
He went to PE. He's on a boat. He sat next to AB de Villiers.
That's comedy.
On the
news,
Dan Nichols show. And I was like, can you ask him some questions? Does he dig comedy? Nothing. Nothing. So Eric's the only guy who's got news, and he fucking doesn't want to tell you.
When is he on Dan Nichols? Because I saw Titi.
I think he does the warm up.
Oh, okay. No, yeah, they don't. They have. They okay. Yeah, they changed the warm up.
Because he had a picture of his feet. AB de Villiers is sitting next to me.
That's funny.
Then he had this weird selfie where he's sitting like this. And AB's kind of photobombing his own selfie. We're like, just ask the Oak. You're there backstage. Isn't that a problem?
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, that's the thing. I mean, that if the being famous is extremely lonely. From what I've read. Oh, please, I'm not lonely. Because I'm not famous.
What are you trying to say?
No, just being famous is extremely lonely.
Victoria isn't actually a guest. He was standing outside.
Yeah.
And he said, all right,
please
help.
Come inside. We'll lol for money. Adam Hills is an Aussie comic. He said he did the Royal Variety performance, and Lady Gaga was part of the thing, and she was standing next to him. He says, no, I'm a friendly Australian guy. So the guy says, hi, I'm Adam. She goes, I'm Gaga. And so we had this lovely conversation, and you get the feeling that these people just really
want anyone
nobody,
to talk to.
Nobody, nobody
talk
knows
to
how to approach them.
The other opposite side of that is having when you're talking to, if you are somewhere and you're with a famous person, and the way that people just feel they can come into that space immediately. And take a selfie. Because if I'm sitting next to like a sports star or something, and they don't recognize me, then they give me the camera, and then I take a picture of the person with Graham Smith or whatever. Yeah. Then while they're looking at the camera in their own selfie, they go, but I knew that guy as well.
Yeah.
No, I'm just a cameraman.
And I always take a shit photo. Like, I'm going to put too much space above. I cut their feet off. Like,
I take a photo. I put the phone in my pants and I take a photo.
Julia Wilson used to say to me is that one night at clubs in Australia at one point, they were running this internal competition among the comics to see who could get and you as well so many times. Like, somebody will come up and congratulate an act.
Yeah.
And your job is to stand as close to that act as possible. And you as well. I got five.
I've seen that at Parker's. They don't recognize the other guy was on stage. They're like, you're really good. You're really good. And the guy sort of creeps in. He's like, and then they go, you're also good.
I like your shtick.
For me, it's weird. I try to get away. though. Like, yeah. You know, and then I come to Dave and like, Dave, fuck, yuck, you're amazing. I just like slide away.
Yeah. That's the one of the reasons someone said, why don't you hang around afterwards at the comedy? I'm like, some nights you really want to just go.
Yeah, but sometimes you need like the affirmation.
You hang around at the bar?
Yeah.
Do you guys see me? Come see how good I was.
I just there are nights where I have to stick around because I'm waiting for something. I have to speak to Joe or something. And then the twat that was the biggest pain in the ass.
These
the
ones
night,
when it comes to
they're
you.
The ones who always, oh, yeah. Is a great night.
Did you like what I did? I helped the show.
Oh, is that? Oh, I love it when it's, if I had a gun right now, I don't mind the
what
jail
they don't
time.
Know is Vittorio does, how he can manufacture a gun just from stuff lying around at the bar.
Yeah. No, I can't manufacture. I just think I need to buy a 3D printer. Then I can print a 3D.
You because know that,
the 3D was it earlier this year that that law got passed Ryan. That said it's not illegal to do that.
Oh, for reals?
Ryan, you know, I went to the 3D printer head office. And at the top it says, don't sell one of these to Vittorio. That's what it says
on the one
there.
Credo. It's the only one rule.
You have to sell it to comes me. Across, I'll just buy it.
It comes across.
Yeah, buy some from someone who bought it. It
comes across on a ticker tape. Do not sell this to Vittorio Leonardi. He will print again.
I would actually want to put that in like just random workshops around Joburg. Do not sell this to Vittorio. And just have become this
you'll
weird
get so Googled.
Of,
you'll get so Googled, yeah.
Who is this Vittorio guy?
It sounds very dangerous.
Are you Googling?
Very dangerous. Richard? But like, shit,
oh, yeah, wait,
like broom factories.
Yeah, what does he do with the broom?
Random, like rubber boots. And
what does he do with the broom?
Okay, that was an obvious one. I know what he does with the broom. But rubber boots?
Rubber boots, it's and lime. For blood splatter.
And those suits, you got to wear the full lycra suit.
No, not necessarily.
Because you do get DNA on you.
Dinner.
Let's talk about the books. We have books. We have books. Let's talk about the books.
All right, so what we got this week on the podcast is we got kind of intelligentsia of comedy.
Yeah. Oh, really?
you are the most, I think, the most well-read, but your subject matter isn't normal.
Mm. No. It's
so what have you? So we're going to do book. Oprah's book club on just now. Do we have a music? Yeah, we do.
Do we have a music?
We have a music.
Did someone bring the music?
No, just a music.
Like I like a porn
cowbell.
Just the one.
Wait, this is the music.
Welcome to the Just Now Comedy Podcast.
Yeah.
Book club.
Book club.
Yeah. Right. Where we read to achieve.
We read to each other. We read books. Victoria, what have you got?
What is it?
Let's see. I've brought basically the abridged version of Spike Milligan's first book of his war memoirs. It's Adolf Hitler, My Part in His Downfall. And
okay. So what is that called?
It's Adolf Hitler, My Part in His Downfall was one of the five books that he wrote for his war memoirs. It's basically everything from when he was drafted into the
Second
army
World
during
war.
During the Second World War. Okay. Sorry, yeah. Second World War and then all the way through till he finally left the military, joined the pool of artists to entertain people after the war, okay. And then went back to England, and that what developed into the Goon Show.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's just what's interesting is that when you read these books, I mean, I got the audiobooks because it's just easier for me to consume, and he reads all of them. So the humor is better. And if you ever get an audiobook from a comedian if they're reading it, shit makes more sense because the timing is there.
Yeah. I wish I could tell that to those people who want my material.
question, Rishley, do you know who Spike Milligan is? Because these guys
Spike
were talking about
Milligan.
And I had no idea who this guy was.
Milligan.
Okay.
I do know who Spike Milligan is. And I know of the Goon Show and that sort of stuff, but I don't know his story. I didn't
The way that it ended up working is that Spike went off to war, got shell shock. The person who came back from the war was not the same person. He was always this extremely funny, very left of center person.
Yeah.
But his humor was completely out of sync with the time that he was in. He would find like-minded people. And that from there, they started, when they were bored, they started writing reams of this oddball stuff that was the earliest echoes of the Goon Show. And from the Goon Show, you go to Q5, which was his sketch show, which then Monty Python.
And then the BBC also, yeah, the BBC, yeah. He had his own special. This guy, there's no one in this country or I think maybe overseas there are a few. There's no one that comes close to what that man's mind does.
Yeah.
So if you do ever have any Spike Milligan stuff,
sounds very
and
awesome.
Also the Goon Show, just go on YouTube and check.
Yeah, this was all new information.
So it's a sketch show on radio.
Oh,
Peter Sellers.
Yeah. That's Harry Seacombe and Spike Milligan.
I mean, we should give it a go. Can we do sketches like that?
To give you an idea.
No, obviously not today. I've never heard it.
This is the opening line of the book. This is how it all started. September the 3rd, 1939. The last minutes of peace ticking away. Father and I were watching Mother digging an air raid shelter. She's a great little woman, said Father, and getting smaller all the time, I added. 2 minutes later, a man called Neville Chamberlain, who did Prime Minister impressions, spoke on the wireless. He said, as from 11 o'clock, we are at war with Germany. I love the we part. War, said mother, it must have been something we said, said father. The people next door panicked, burnt their post office books and took in the washing.
So this, you can't do that, just to say the fact that the mom's digging the shelter and she's getting smaller all the time.
But that's the running joke the whole way through, that his mom is doing all this heavy lifting and his dad is this freaking layabout. He said, this is the first war summons arrives, the arms papers on his majesty's service. And says, the king must think very highly of you, son. He's for asking you to join the war, she said, dragging my father up the stairs for his annual bath. And just lines like that, the whole thing.
I love that
time.
Character. I just love the idea of this, like, lady.
So,
there
we go. So we've taught some peeps.
I would say,
what's abridged?
This is how I actually got into it. I mean, I'd listened to the Goon Shows for ages, but I didn't know that Spike had written War
Memoirs.
Here's
the sad thing. I've got the full Goon Show on cassette.
But, dude, those.
I don't know what's beta.
Beta?
What is it?
No,
on
it.
Fucking.
It's audio tape.
Oh, because it's audio.
And it's like. I remember finding it online. It was a 4 gig download because they produced it.
Oh, no, I'll give you the tapes if you can get a recorder.
No, okay. I've got a thing that converts audio tapes to MP3.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, it's the Spike Milligan's War Memoirs. It was Adolf Hitler, My Part in His Downfall, Rommel, Gunner Who, Monty, His Part in My Victory, Mussolini, His Part in My Downfall, Where Have All the Bullets Gone, Goodbye Soldier.
Which one would you recommend?
Which
is
the first
opener?
Read the first one. It's the one that's got, it's Adolf Hitler, My Part in His Downfall.
Oh.
It's got the most sort of whimsy to it, because as the books advance, it's the Second World War.
Oh, right.
And some very dark shit happens. In Mussolini,
His
Part in My Downfall.
Are they all small books like this?
They average about a centimeter and a half, and then they get thicker as he crams away. Because it was supposed to be a trilogy, and he ended up writing like 6 or 7 books.
Oh,
because there was just more and more material.
Fast and the Furious.
He used to write letters to people.
To Anthony.
Yeah,
he'd say, well
genius.
Done, well done on your this, I really enjoyed it thing, and then he'd publish the replies. Crazy letters. He writes letters to the Queen. He writes a letter to you. If he saw you doing a show, you'd get a letter. Handwriting, proper. Old school. In the post, with a stamp.
During strike season in Britain, when there was all these strikes going on, he wrote to the Times saying, I hereby declare that I am on strike from writing jokes. And that comedians who bring so much joy, perhaps if we step aside, people will realize just how dark the world is.
I've been on strike for running jokes for 18 years now.
But we need to bring letter writing back, I think.
Oh, yeah. Hugely.
Do you ever read those, what's his name? Ben Trevorrow's letters.
He
encloses money in the envelope, then he sends a letter to the EFF, or he sends it to thing, and then he publishes what they say. So there, a lot of people say, we cannot accept this 10 rand. And then send it back.
Yeah.
These letters are just filled with sarcasm and irony and weirdness.
It was when he was applying to, like, I don't know, Michael House or something for his son. And he's like, here's 10 bucks, the sweet deal sort of thing. And he's literally taking the piss. But this just goes back and forth. He doesn't stop writing.
And then it is, what have you got there, Rishley? You seem to have quite a heavy book there.
Oh, we got a second book. Let's just go to the second book. While
we'll come back to him.
Yeah, we'll come back to this.
Ryan didn't bring any books.
I got them in my head.
He doesn't read.
I've read lots of books.
You can make the word read out of East
My favorite book being The
Art of
The Roots. Roots is one of my favorite books I've ever read by Alex Haley. Roots, the one Kunta Kinte.
The one that made it into a series.
Yeah, I watched that when I read that book when I was like 14 or 15. So that book was like.
It's amazing. The books that you read in adolescence, like that sort of teenage years, they'll get you.
Yeah, it opens your eyes to a lot of things.
Massive. And it's the person who suggests that book to you, you'll like this.
Yeah.
And you're like, what do you mean? And then they give it to you. So a lot of kids
it's a very
rings,
big
the Hobbit.
It's like the size of the Bible, though. It took its
Roots.
When you look at it, it looks
daunting.
So
my mom
daunting.
Used to give me 50 cents a chapter because I didn't read. So she'd find a book for me that
you
she thought I'd like.
You would have made a fortune if you read it.
Exactly. But she would give me the book and say, now read this because this is a nice book. So I was about 13 and it was Rage of Angels by... But I read it and I got every night she would test me and then I got my 50 cents a chapter.
That's dope.
Dude, you would have made a fortune on if you just read War and Peace,
nothing.
Crime and Punishment,
Lord
of the Rings.
Got my
but the thing is, you have to read those books.
Yeah.
So I read lots of books. In front of me, I have the newest book I have, which I bought like the other day, which is Heist, South Africa's Cash in Transit Epidemic Uncovered.
Okay, I won't spoil it for you.
We're going to take pictures of these books so we see them.
But I like this one. It's convinced them in 90 seconds or less.
It's a dating book.
It's basically, the thing is I find this book handy because it tells you how to, when you meet somebody, how to react to them, how to You can go into another country, into another city, okay. anywhere in the world, anywhere in.
So it's for reading body language and that sort of thing.
Yeah, just how to reflect what energy is given at you and how to benefit from that.
Oh, cool.
So, and did you put that into the real world when you read it? Did you try the techniques I said?
So
and
so
it
cool, convince them in 90 seconds or less. Who
like
wrote
I don't ever feel out of place anywhere ever. Like if I want to get something if I'm in Beirut, I'll get it because I know how to just. But it's also part of my personality, I guess. But this has helped me because for performing, I find it helps because you want to be liked, right?
In the first 9 seconds, yeah.
And this helps for you to read the... it's basically telling you how to read people, which is very helpful for comedy, for life, for anything. Oh. But I like it because...
Can you notice a change in your stand-up comedy after reading that book?
In my comedy, not specifically to comedy, but in general, I would say.
Especially as a host.
It makes it makes you wary of what people's faces are saying. Because before I'd make the mistake of when you, like, if you're hosting a show and asking somebody a question and they give you a negative answer, you keep plugging or you try and break them, so to speak. You want them to be involved, but you don't have to. You don't have to. There's 100 people in this room. Then you just say, like, yo, what's your name? Then you say, my name is Dickface. And I just go, cool, Dickface.
Yes.
What?
And
you wouldn't have done that had you not known about that.
Now I'm like,
I wish I had that book in Wellington at a golf day. I went on at 10:30 and I said, how's everyone? My name's Dave. Are you from Wellington? First table. Lacey Saw, Engelsman. Dunyo Krapis. In Foco.
Yeah, that's it.
That was the answer I got as I walked on stage. I'm like, okay.
That's an open invitation to carry on with your life.
Let's move on. So I put the mic back into the mic holder and I went back to my hotel.
Left?
Yeah, I left. I wish I had read that book.
No, but that's yeah, but
well, they had made the mistake of paying me a week before.
But it's also that table also
and putting me in a hotel.
But the table also made the mistake of stealing the energy from everybody else. Like you're wary of all that shit now because it's like
I kind of wonder what I would have done. I wish I had that book.
If you walk into the room
thrown it at him. That's what I would have done.
I wish I had that book. Yeah. These were very large.
Lester Yudio Klein your side lost.
It's like when you go into there's a bunch of guys and there's one guy being a dick towards you. When you leave, you're like, fuck those guys. You don't say fuck that one guy.
That one guy.
It's, everybody. It's like, when I got there, everybody was being a dick. But it's like, just one guy. No. And that's how it is in comedy as well. Like, one guy, then everybody else would rather him leave. They would rather him leave and you continue performing.
So your advice is to ignore that table and move on. Find
ignore
some other
the
people.
Table. Like, the last week at the club at Goliath, there was literally the worst table ever. There were... belligerent, they were taking selfies during the act. They were completely
out of
control.
That's a generational thing. That's kind of...
They weren't even young. They were middle-aged white people. They were just like... afterwards, there was a lady that was sitting at their table that came to apologize, like, I'm sorry for those people. They haven't been to comedy. I think they were talking at this volume in the front at each other, at their normal speaking volume. So I don't like to chastise people. They're grown-ass...
And you're the host, were you?
Yeah, I was hosting. But, I mean, they're grown-ass adults... No. And I think that for some reason they keep quiet while I'm on because
I find people at Goliath talk louder than at other clubs. It might be the space.
I think it's the space.
The tables are far apart.
Yes, it's
and
the room.
They feel that no one can see them.
Yeah.
Friends of mine came to comment. I had to ask them to shut up.
Yeah, how many bloody times that happens because they're either
buddies.
Fans or they're friends.
So they think once they've seen you. They we've seen Dave, we can talk now. I'm like, no, you've got to have time for
no, shit brick, you can't. It was on the finals of on the finals of Kamikaze, I went on and I was explaining, okay, so it is a competition, it's a live room, comedy can't work in a noisy thing, and this whole thing about just
you
keep
talking
it
to the audience.
Yeah, right? I'm just briefing the
just
audience.
Explain what Kamikaze is.
Kamikaze is Parker's annual
open mic
competition, I've actually brought some of the notes I made from those nights. And just explaining to the room, look, these people are under enough pressure. There's 14 acts, and we've got to get through all of them. They've got 5 to 7 minutes to dazzle you. So, keep the volume to zero, please. And then the whole time I was doing it, there's this table off to the left of young, maybe 20-somethings who are having a fat fucking chat, at which point I turned to them, and that entire monologue was aimed at you!
What is wrong with people? Fuck's sake.
And you know what? They came to see their buddy do 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, and that buddy did not get through.
Exactly. But that's able the other day, they didn't care because, basically every act had a chance to, shut them up, but they didn't want to keep quiet.
Yeah.
And, I eventually lost.
So I wonder if there's a massive man at the front door at Goliath. Like, he's a large person.
That's what I didn't understand. They need to stop it,
Yeah, the reality.
I'm not saying that guy specifically, but I guess it's. I mean, there were like a table of, I'd say, 20 people. It's a massive table, right? Yeah, from the stage, right to the. Like a massive table. And both nights, the first night, there was a massive table in exactly the same place. And there were a dope bunch of people. They were all having fun. They were chilling. They were doing whatever.
So does your book help you in those situations?
It helps you.
Okay, let's go to your second book there.
I think I'm actually going to try to find that book.
The Art of War.
The Art of War.
Who suggested that to you? Because that's quite a very regular. It's on this book, the top 100 books you must read.
Yes, yes.
Because it helps you negotiate.
So for me, my sister-in-law bought me a copy of it, like the concise version, the smaller one.
I remember those. Yeah, yeah. It's same as this.
It's very small.
It's like a penguin. Baby.
When I was reading through it, I was like, I like this, so I bought another one. I like this, and I like Richard Branson's. What's his
Screw it, let's do it.
Screw it, let's do it. I've read it like 20 times.
I got into that book when someone also suggested you'll like this book, then I'll read it.
Mm.
When they're in that balloon and they're cruising across, there's nothing. That I almost felt the fear in the way he's talking about. The diesel fumes. Real. Also that boat that he went across the thing. He's also clutching out the side.
Yes.
You think these great heroes, and then you see such weakness and such.
Yeah.
You think, shit, this guy's
for me that
bulletproof.
Yeah, for me
he's
the thing
he's
that,
a human.
That I found that really stuck with me from that is when you as a kid selling. Tried to sell pumpkins or something, and he bought the seeds. His mother gave him like $1, then he bought like a bag of seeds for 60 cents, and then he planted them. Like, so when this thing grows, you can sell each pumpkin for $8 each, whatever. So, like, so he had a business at like eight years old, and then the fowls ate the seeds, and then the business obviously finished.
He lost. And there he learned about risk.
And also, the other thing is, you don't know what you're going to do until you put yourself in situations. So put yourself in more
Have
situations.
Have you read The Art of War? So The Art of War is literally written by army generals and stuff. So it's literally the art of war, like war. Actual going to war.
Although The Art of War is almost don't go to war. That's the whole message.
It tells you not to go to war, but if you have to confront your enemies, don't.
So that war situation, let's talk about in a boardroom.
Everybody's your enemy.
We meet a lot of clients when we do these things. So they'll say, please come and meet us. We want to see. That's the art of war. The first thing they want for you is to be funny.
Yeah.
In a boardroom situation. Yes. I've seen it with John Fisper. Got up and said, guys, can we just talk about the lighting, the sound, the thing, what this meeting's for? There's no need for us to be funny. And he gave the comedians like, and we felt much better. That was an out of war thing.
Yeah.
Because
he
killed it straight away. He said, guys, we're not yet to be funny.
Divide and conquer.
Stop thinking the comedians are going to be funny in this boardroom.
Yeah, because now
in the bucket.
But what do you need backstage? I need a very good bucket.
That Richard Branson thing when he says, they started a nothing business. So he just said, what he found was these women had sex unprotected. They were pregnant. They didn't want to go to their parents. Didn't want to tell the boyfriend because it's the 1960s.
Yeah.
So there's this free love and things. So he said, well, come sit on a beanbag. We've got some music playing. So then he said, where do you get this music from? What's this? So now all of a sudden, all his businesses are starting right there. Yeah. He's getting a clinic where people can come and have safe abortions. He's got music no one's ever heard. Then he's taking that artist and making him famous. Then he starts a music label.
Mike Oldfield.
Then he starts, Mike Oldfield. Then he starts all these businesses out of just... that's what I say to people, like, do 20 things. Be there. Go to the audition. I don't want to go to casting today. Why not? You're not going to get the casting. But have you ever met people sitting in that row of castings?
Story about that.
They actually phoned me to come to a casting now this morning, and I also said no.
Don't worry about the casting. The people you meet in that casting are sitting with you in the same boat as you. They're actors, comedians, directors, producers. There's such lack of people to talk to. Tell me about your casting story.
I went there with my buddy Robert. You remember Robert? So he was on the show before. And
he was on the show for 10 minutes.
Yeah, but he was here the whole time. And so we were sitting in a casting. I got called in. He had already gone. And he was sitting there. When I came back out, he had this look on his face of, please, for the love of God, can we please go? Apparently, in the 5 or 6 minutes that I was in the casting, there was this dude who sat next to him that just started speaking about how he used to sell, how he used to run a video store, and under the table, he used to sell porn. But
Handmade porn.
No, but that's the thing, the weird shit that he had. I mean, this dude was selling stuff that is illegal anyway, even before, like very dark.
But you know what I find?
And all the places he used to hide that shit, and Robert's going, please stop talking to me, please stop talking.
But you know what?
Maybe a casting is like being on a plane.
It's also a guy, it's also people that like that example is, you meet these people that have done, maybe had a Ferrari and a mansion, and then and then it comes to like an end, and that period directly after that, is when they need to speak their way back to sanity.
You know, yeah, what I'm saying? I get the feeling.
That's what I find. Like, everybody that tells you that thing always tells you a story about how great it was,
yes,
or shit it was, or whatever, mm-hmm, like how tumultuous it was for
there's
them.
There's a lot of times that happens at castings because they do spread that net wide.
Yeah.
And you can see if someone's got time in the day to sit there from, say, 12 till 2,
they're fucking mad.
They're not working.
Mm. Yeah.
So I understand comedians work at night, so we are available during the day to do that. But the other people aren't working.
But also, we are never dedicated 2 hours away to do a casting, bruh. Yeah. If I can't be in and out there in like 10 minutes or 15 minutes, then I leave. I can't wait for an
hour. Clearly, Richley was earning good money. I'll stay.
No, his I can't wait for an hour, but if they... Yo.
His wife's a chartered accountant.
She is. I actually didn't know what your wife did for a living. That's cool.
I know, I've made that up. Is she?
But it started at... she actually is. She's a financial manager.
Good, yes. What good are Dave, you and, Lotto numbers, go.
You and Dusty. Married
Dusty.
Well.
Yeah, no, actually, Dusty's wife used to work with my wife at SAB.
Oh, man. Small world.
I introduced him. I was there when Dusty met his wife. We were at Parker's, and then we were all standing in the thing, the bar, and she was drinking red wine, and he was drinking. I was like, why is this guy drinking red wine? Because you know you're trying to impress a girl. No,
I meet a girl, I'm like, I start doing heroin. She's like, what are you doing? I'm just doing
whatever you do.
I like you.
And it's... And then Dusty was like,
yes. A round of applause for the heroin edits.
So yeah, Dusty.
Okay, so those are your books.
Yeah, so on I would suggest you read The Art of War.
Anybody, can I have it? Can you give it to me now?
You can take it and
I'll swap books. This is proper book club. I'll swap my books with you.
Cool. Okay, let's see what you got there, Dave.
Right, okay. This is, I suppose it was comedy related.
Yeah.
So this is, I go to a bookshop down the road from me and I give them my old books and then he'll give me, I give him 10, it gives me.
But I feel like I'm a bit of a hoarder. I don't want
to. My friend said to me, keep your books, put them on the shelf. And I'm the complete opposite. Like, I give them away. Mm. If I've read it, you must read it now. So the bookshop,
I lend them out, I also give them away under the guise of lending
you're
them.
You're not getting that back.
I have to buy it. This is actually my third one of this.
So this one is the adult joke book, and it's, as you can see, it's very thick. That's also in 14-point type. But I've got 8 of these. So I started buying these in 1999 when I kind of started doing comedy.
And how much of that stuff has ended up on stage?
I've read all of them.
None of it.
And none of it has ended up on stage. What it does is it keeps, it's almost like a comedy gym.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're quite long jokes. Yeah. And they're very old school. So there's a thing and a story. And then Mary said, and then the Pope said,
Which one is this? How old is this?
So this one is the adult only joke book for adults who can laugh at themselves, don't take life too seriously, hate being politically correct. So
when was that published?
2002.
So they are hectic. You wouldn't do these jokes now.
That's cool.
Hey, Mum, what's an orgasm? I don't know, dear. Ask your father.
Yeah.
Hey, Mum, if the stork brings babies, who fucks the stork? So that, nice. What you say is, do they end up on stage? There are nights, I'm telling you now, the nights when I look into the audience and I start doing some observational and I realize these guys want crappies. They want jokes.
That's it.
And as soon as you do tell a joke and they laugh, then you're like, oh, well, here we go.
Because it's you've obviously had, I'm sure you've heard the story, though, like I always tell it, that my dad used to buy me joke books when I was a kid.
Mm. We spoke about that in the car last summer, the 100,000 jokes for kids.
Yeah. No, it's not even for kids. just 1,000 bar jokes.
But you realize like then the humor, there's bar jokes, but some of them are very old school.
Very old school.
You have to
them.
Understand, almost understand the war.
Yeah.
I read these. I used to have this next to my bed, and before I went to bed, I used to read like about 10 jokes.
But mine all got taken by people. It was the same thing. They're like, oh, then they start reading it, and they come visit, whatever.
And then they disappear
then
with
they
it.
And just leave with it.
Yeah. No. People tried that with my Garfield books. That shit would never happen.
Yeah, Garfield. I used to have Asterix and Obelix as well.
Yeah. Fucks with that.
So those books I kept. I wrestled those away from
people. Asterix and Obelix.
Asterix, the Garfield weird thing, books, Mo, Calvin and Hobbes.
When I was a kid, my mom's boyfriend used to go to like rubbish dumps and make stuff. He was weird, but he came back with a box.
He was homeless.
And this box was closed, so he said, "Yeah, this is for you." So I look at this box and it's been on a rubbish dump, so it's got sort of like moisture.
Pieces of banana.
And I open it, and there were about, I'd say, 150 Mad magazines.
Oh my
those
word!
Those were mine. That's what I was about to say.
What bloody Philistine?
Was it in Rudderport? But now think about it. So there's 150 Mad magazines. I'm 12 or 13.
Yes,
I devoured that stuff, bro. That was for me. Someone would say, like, I read this book. For me, those Mad magazines were like, that started me going, I can see the joke. Sergio Arrigone, Spy versus Spy, the little things in the spine, the little that phone bone with his feet.
And it's also a little comic.
And the way that they do that life's like that.
Yeah.
seven panel comics.
Yeah.
That for me, I would say, without him knowing it, the guy said, yeah, go become a comedian.
Mad
Magazine wasn't allowed in this country.
I had a suitcase literally filled with Mad Magazines as well.
Did you just carry it around with you?
Yeah. But it stayed on top of the wardrobe. And then somebody, like the one day I was like, I need to get into this. Because I stopped reading them, but I knew that they were always on top of the wardrobe.
It's like, scoping.
Then I got to high school, I'm like, let me.
Except Mad Magazine's pages usually weren't stuck together.
Somebody took them, I don't know. There was none, not literally not one.
So that was the Mad Magazine. There was also the offshoot that was called Cracked, which never quite made it.
Cracked became an internet thing.
Cracked, because they tried the same character. So Alfred E. Newman, and they tried Cracked with that other character.
But it was the same font as well. It was probably the guys who were involved in Mad who went off and did their own thing.
So that's my adult joke book. And I still keep this next to the bed.
Give us another joke from there. Give us
a
nice one.
How many people it takes to change a light bulb.
Oh, yeah?
So that's stuff there. Some people never seem motivated to participate, but are content to watch others do everything. These layabouts are called spectators. So I don't know what that is.
Spectators?
Yeah.
That's a derogatory term for Mexicans.
That's right. So there's Polish jokes in here. There's Polish jokes. There's racial jokes. These things are not...
Go on to Wikipedia.
Oh, shit. That was a very racist joke that I dropped.
Dude, go on to Wikipedia and look for list of racial slurs.
Nah, I'm okay.
And you'll have this many... But that's the thing. It goes...
What did you say, Bushy?
Many,
you told us Bushy.
This many about Germans. This many about Italians. And then... Black people, and it goes and goes and goes. I'm going, right, so any of you who need evidence, there you freaking go. Yeah.
How many, I word of white for white people, because we were
that's
trying to think
short,
about that on
that's
the set.
That's the shortest list. Let's see, for white people, it's Whitey, the Blue-Eyed Devil, Honky. Those are the three that I remember.
I'd rather not
read
that list because, if I am making these racial slurs by mistake,
there's a beautiful sketch from Saturday Night Live with Richard Pryor and Chevy Chase where it's a job interview. It's brilliant. And so Chevy Chase goes, this is the final part of the job interview. Yeah. And says, and I'm going to throw out these words. And he starts.
Free association.
Going, yeah, free association. And it becomes racial slurs. And it says, what? It's a tar baby. I'm
cracker.
Sorry.
It's
a cracker. It's a spear chucker. Honky.
Cracker ass.
Then she goes, he drops nigger. And he goes, dead honky.
I think that's 2018.
Two fat blokes are sitting at the pub. One says to the other, you're round. The other bloke says, so are you, you fat bastard. These are jokes we've seen in you.
Yes.
But you know what it is? It's like reading this doesn't. What gym does a comedian have?
That is, but
it's the gym of the mind.
This isn't what I'm going to do on stage. It's rhythm. And also, it's just to go and to see how times have changed. Like,
I've got one
joke about Rabbi.
Have you seen Kakfani? I've got also one called Kakfani.
I've got that.
There's
a guy that's going to be on this podcast. He wrote a book called Random Cuck. So he's a cartoonist and he lived in South Africa in the 70s. So he's written this book called Random Cuck. He's got a Random Cuck 2 coming out.
Oh, yes.
When you read it, you actually get quite nostalgic, almost get a lump in your throat because it tells his story about growing up in the 70s.
Oh, it's not a
white kid in the 70s during apartheid, and he's got all these little. With the cartoons in it, the movies that he watched, the first time he kissed a girl, the first time he went to the
party. Yeah, the Wonder Years.
That's brilliant.
Full on Wonder Years. It's Wonder Years for South African. No, remember the movie Wonder Years. Remember those days in apartheid.
Yeah, Wonder Years, bro.
So Wonder Years.
Speaking of Wonder Years, my second book. This is Jamie's 15-minute meals.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to punt him because I don't dig the guy and I don't dig his TV show. But as a dad... There's no time to cook for your lights.
No, that's brilliant.
So he goes karate, whatever it is, judo. We're home by 7. He's got to be in bed by 8. So
you Jamie
it up. Helps me.
Delicious.
It helps me
what
just in terms
it?
Of...
Delicious, nutritious.
Jamie's 15-minute meal. Delicious, nutritious, super fast food.
Ooh.
But it's signed by Jamie.
Hey. Oh, that's so dope.
And he wrote an
it's
essay.
Not really. It's
signed by
signed
Dave.
By my friend.
Okay.
In all my books,
name's also Jamie.
In every book in my house, you'll see there's a thing signed in the front. But no, I autograph it. I just make up a story. Like, dear Dave, good luck for the future. You're the best. But every now and then there are, because we'll commede or host at a book launch.
Yes.
So one was the guy from the Tour de France cycling man that does all the voice. Phil Liggett. So Phil Liggett, he says, are you doing the August? I'm like, I'm doing it tomorrow. He says, so he wrote in there, so to Dave, the August is not a joke like you, Phil Liggett. So I've got the book there.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
But so 15-minute meals, I would suggest to dads, and if you got your lighty, hold your lighty.
He's turning 2 tomorrow
it's not
on
that
Sunday.
You're going to make these amazing meals. They're just fast
and quick. But I saw like a bad and there's a leaf. Why is there a leaf in there?
Oh, okay.
That's
classic Dave.
You have to have that
It's seasoning.
Just take a photo.
Yeah, just put that on there.
It's quite a nice looking one.
Is it? That's Bougainvillea. Obviously, he was flattening it in the Jamie. Sorry, Jamie, I flattened some of my dacha leaves in your
Dave,
book.
But once
it is, well, it improves the flavor, or it makes you want to eat.
But I suggest this for dads or just for single guys. I'm not saying it impress your date or anything, but the fact that they do take less than 15 minutes.
It's a utilitarian book. But, it's a utility.
You got a lot of flack. Online, I read about that because people couldn't make the meals in 15 minutes.
Okay, I'd agree with the thing, but read in the beginning, he says some of these ingredients you're not going to have. So that's before you make it, read it.
Yes, because he's 15 minutes.
Read it on the Monday. On the table. Yeah, read it on the Monday. Plan it for the Thursday.
Oh, so he pre-plans.
But I'm very into that. If I cook, you'll see I have my bowls and all the stuff.
That's obviously the way
I love that. Yeah. Jeez, it's great when that happens. You just literally just put it together.
For me, it is. The 15 minutes.
But you're making dishes, though. Like, yeah. 25
little
bowls.
What a dishwasher's
No, I do. I get the plaster. I mold the dish. I fire it in my kiln. Yeah. I glaze it. Nice. Then I have the one bowl.
You're going
to the other bowl. Like on
15-minute meals. Wheel. 4 hours.
And Patrick Swayze's behind
and then,
you.
And then I go to that shop with a video guy and I get my porn.
And you get the anvil and you make yourself
so
a knife.
You have the book of 15-minute meals and the book of 4 hours of pottery.
Yeah.
And what's the third book there? You got another book on top.
There is a lacquer book that I have read recently, which was Popular Mechanics is a magazine, and they bring out a book every 2 years of the best of. The book is called How to Make Anything.
Okay.
And it's well written and it's funny, but it is how to make anything.
Yeah.
It's the stupidest things you never thought. Someone has to make that. Yeah. They'll have it in there.
Oh, so I actually saw that. Yeah. How to make anything.
So this one here is from the bookshop Swappery. So he'll say take any book you want. So I normally do end up choosing autobiographies. It's quite weird. Those kind of interest me.
Because they don't read fiction, that's why.
Yeah. It's weird. One word of warning. I can't get into The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
No, I'm not a big fiction.
I'll give you a word of warning now about reading bios, especially written even by the comedians that they're about. A lot of the time, you will not like the person they are. I found this with George Carlin.
You mentioned George Carlin. Yeah, I would pray him if I could, because that inspired me to become a comedian.
Dude, I mean, George Carlin, he wrote a book with his brother just to give it perspective, and it's about his life. Hmm. Then his daughter wrote a book called The Carlin Home Companion, My Life with George. And you compare the two books, and they're both, they don't lie, either of them, but holy God, George was a horrible human being.
Pretty bad, eh?
Well, it's the thing of he focused so much on his career and being George that his home life suffered for it. I mean, at one point, his daughter's 11 years old, and her mom's a drunk, and George is a drug addict. He's on coke half the time. And so
she's
the two
in charge of
them,
the house.
They were on holiday, and at one point it got so out of hand. They're in Hawaii. They had knives at each other. And so she sat them down, this 11-year-old girl, and had to draw up a UN peace treaty. Literally, it said, you guys will behave for the rest of the holiday. That lasted for an hour.
She obviously read The Art of War.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that is the thing. Don't meet your heroes. So now this book is called, it's actually got to do with that. So this was made into a movie. There's a guy called Toby Young who got a job in New York as Vanity Fair. Contributor.
Yeah?
So they made it into a movie using old what's his face? Simon
Pegg. Hugh Grant.
Simon Pegg. Yeah. But when you start reading the book in terms of comedy, there's so many times when you get a big idea or invited to a big thing. Yeah. You're going to be on the Dan Nichols show. Now you're on TV, the only thing. And there's the one way to do the show, but there's a thousand ways to fuck it up.
Yeah.
So this is his big job was to go to New York, become a Vanity Fair one of those contributors.
He writes writer.
Watch that page, that fun page at the end of the thing. The journey to how he fucks this up is so important, and it's very much The Art of War, the 90 seconds to impress someone. If he had read that before he went to New York.
Yeah.
But you cringe. This is real. It was made into a movie, so it's Jeff Bridges, Simon Pegg, and
he basically just did all the.
So this guy Toby Young is called How to Lose Friends and Alienate People. So it's obviously a play on words with the Dale Carnegie How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yes.
But when you read it, I've done the things in this book. Obviously, I don't remember because I'm not on a world stage like he was. He fucked up in front of a lot of people.
Yes.
I've done these things, so I cringe when I read this book.
I've had nightmares of the interviews I fucked up in trying to go to.
I still have the dreams of walking onto stage and I don't remember my comedy and people booing me. It's a proper dream.
That happens all the time. It's when you, every time
I invited back to my school, how many times in your dream? Where you got to go talk to them.
Yes.
And you get there and the kids don't
dig
you.
That's weird. Because for my one man, every night, I've done two one mans, right? And every single night before, I had a dream where they're introducing me and I'm standing backstage and I can hear the people clapping but I have nothing to say.
I've got nothing.
And I walk out there.
I stand on there and I'm like, have you guys ever ridden a bicycle? And they're like, boo. like, no, but it's the joke's funny. And then I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Where does this joke go? And then I wake up sweating, bro. Yeah. How does that fucking joke go?
And their faces are all like, you can't actually see their faces. It's just like
it's faceless.
A gray mess of faces.
And I'm naked. Every single time.
I think I've only ever had maybe three dreams that were related
comedy.
To stand-up. Yeah.
No, mine's a nightmare. Mine's probably once a week.
Yeah, no, the dreams didn't go
day,
well.
Before golf day, I'll have that dream.
Because you wake up, you always wake up too early.
And then I'm like, fuck this, man. You got this. Don't have that dream.
Yeah. But it feels real, though. Because like, for me, it's like I'm looking at my notes.
So real,
and I'm like, there's no notes here. Oh, shit. I left my notes at home. Once I just go through my notes.
Then
one
I get into
time.
The taxi, and then I go. But it's not a taxi, like a meter taxi. It's a
taxi. It's a 15.
So then I go, and then I get, and then I'm late for the gig. Then they phone me and say, where are you? I said, no, I just went to fetch my notes. I'll be there now. I said, no, the gig's over. We got to Vittorio. And I'm like, this is worse than I thought.
So it's your nightmare and my dream. That's awesome.
Just I got a gig. I got a golf day.
Yeah.
No, but that dream, that happened.
Conception.
A lot. Inception. So now, besides the dreams, Ryan Holiday.
Yes.
A Boxburg resident.
He watches movies.
I know that people aren't going to believe that you have read books. Because we've seen the corrections I have to do on your memes.
Yeah, I haven't written books. I've read them.
What have you got for us?
Okay, so I didn't bring books because they're e-books.
Okay.
But so we were talking about biographies, and the book I want to talk about was
biographies.
Biographies.
Biographies. Biographies is a story about
a toilet.
Yes. Biography. Where you poop.
Kevin Hart's first one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know much about Kevin Hart. I assumed he was an overnight success. I don't know why.
Took him like 10, 15 years.
And
or so.
To read that book was super inspiring because he got big opportunities like sitcoms. Cancelled. Then he was like, you know what? If I write it myself, it'll be amazing. I didn't have enough influence. Then gets it. Next one, pilot, cancelled. Then goes to tour. It was amazing, the ups and downs, and he stuck at it. And I mean,
what's the book called?
I can't remember the name of the sitcom.
It's just I Can't Make This Stuff Up or something.
Yeah.
That's the name of his one man as well.
I Can't Make This Stuff Up.
See, the things we won't remember those sitcoms because they're 50,000 channels over there.
Yeah.
And every comedian in LA has got a script in his pocket.
Yeah.
Mm.
They might be waiting. But they're waiting, and the directors are sitting there having lunch. And then directors say, have you got a script? And you say, yeah, I've got it. And that's how it worked.
Yeah, because Jamie Foxx had a thing, Martin had a thing.
Jamie Foxx, if you ever watched his interviews on that he's done with Joe Rogan or whatever, he was at home and he thought, hang on a minute, something's wrong here. I've got the talent, I'll do the stuff. So he started doing little things. He built a studio in his home.
Mm.
So it was a sound studio and a film studio. And anyone who came to his parties had to do a performance.
Mm.
So now he's got you. He's got guys that are famous now.
Yeah.
He said Jay-Z would stand in the corner. Hi, how you doing? Yeah, it's good.
I'm Jay-Z.
I sound a little bit like Phil Neville. Aaron Neville.
That is a terrifying voice.
But he had these people there. He said, if you come to my party, you do whatever it is that you do. If you do comedy, do 5 minutes in my studio with 12 or 16 people.
Yeah.
If you're a musician, I want to hear a song.
Yeah.
So he started doing that.
But so that's the
opportunity.
Yeah.
But this is now in the 80s. This is before Jamie Foxx was famous. Then that's when the things started coming, those things. But we wouldn't hear about it.
Yeah.
So you, Phil, what's your guy's name? Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart, yeah. So I don't love
you
his
comedy.
You
dig him now because of that?
I have way more respect for him now.
Yeah.
And, it's very
comedy is not the
overnight success takes
not
15 years.
But it's crazy when you see Kevin Hart in, like, say, an old scary movies, those spoof movies, and he plays some idiot character.
Yeah.
And now he's super bankable.
Yeah.
It's insane, and it just goes to show you got to pay your dues.
So we're expecting big things from you, Ryan Holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another book was, you guys were speaking about Richard
Branson.
How do you
read an e-book? On Kindle?
On my phone.
Yeah, that's
fine. I can lie down and read it.
I have a Kindle, though. I have lots of books on Kindle.
I have a Kindle, and then it hurt my nose when I fell asleep.
Yeah.
It
literally fell over. But you get a little thing that, like a device that makes it, that props it up for
props
you.
Props it.
No, I just does that for porn.
Yeah. Anyway, so
props.
Yeah,
it
so
up,
we're talking about
stabilized.
Richard Branson, and you read the books, and it's like, oh, this guy's so perfect. You know, I know you spoke about his weakness, but they start businesses when they're young, and you're like, I'm not that. And then I read Steve Jobs' book, and I like that because he was incredibly flawed. I'm not saying it was cool the way he behaved in so many ways, but it shows that you can be this like monster. Billionaire, not monster, it's put his word. But you can be the super successful visionary billionaire person and not have been started a business when you were like 7 years old. Like
you could just steal it from the people.
Also did Steve Jobs.
So we've got 5 minutes left. So you into ebooks. So you suggest people, do you read it on
do you register
on Amazon or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it because you can lie in bed and not have to deal with I prefer the feel of a real book, but it's easier.
So do you turn your phone portrait? you turn it landscape and then
but
scroll.
The what irritates me is the scroll part, because you have to keep scrolling.
Yeah. No, you just tap the bottom right to the thing and it pages.
Yeah, but he means up and down.
No, but up and down.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's a music thing for chords which you would like that scrolls automatically if you get the pro version.
Phone, I think the new phones also.
How fast do you read? Well, I read it and then it starts scrolling for you. Like, whoa.
Yeah, but the new phones actually can, they work with your eyes, so you can scroll by looking.
Jesus. But also the upside of an ebook is whenever you have 5 minutes, 10 minutes here, you can just whip out your phone and read it. It's highly likely you're going to be carrying around.
It's the same as podcasts. You'll download books to read later.
That note, download the Just Now Comedy Podcast.
Well, if they listen to it,
tell other people that aren't listening.
Well, we're done. We're going to get the sex people in here. We like to put Vaseline on the door and squash them in. Victoria, thanks for coming.
Dude, we want to announce
your podcast.
Started it on Halloween. It's called Urbane Myths. It's a chronicle of the strange and unexplained from across South Africa.
Okay. Yeah. And it's by yourself or do you have guests?
No, it's usually by myself. I mean, I'll have the occasional guest then. The episode 5 that'll be coming out in, I think, 4 weeks' time is How to Make an Urban Myth. And it's about a friend of mine who apparently has accidentally created two urban myths or two stories that became myth. A friend of mine who I found out had been part of a ghost hunting unit, and then her work followed her home.
She had ghosts at home?
Yeah, for 3 weeks something followed her home.
Oh no, I don't like these stories.
So yeah, it's actually, funny enough, it's a book that I've just bought. It's a hardcover book, was made in 1975, which is Myths and Legends of South Africa, and it takes the major tribes of South Africa and goes through
Urbane Myths?
Urbane Myths, yes.
And it's hosted by?
Vittorio Leonardi.
And I'm playing the Godfather theme just for you.
Oh, you see,
because you're Italian.
That's a beautiful thing. I'm the damn McDonald's.
My name's Dave Levinson. This is Just a Comedy Podcast with who you?
I'm Ryan Holiday.
And you?
I'm always the Shlubi.
Okay, cool.
And I'm Vittorio Leonardi. I'll see you guys tonight at Parker's.
Thank you.
Yay!
This is CliffCentral.com.